6 minutes now past 12 o'clock. And good afternoon. Welcome back to Midday on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Gary Eichten. Welcome. Minnesota Governor Arne Carlson is going to be touring storm-damaged parts of southern Minnesota this afternoon after a tornado or tornadoes extensively damaged several southern Minnesota communities late yesterday afternoon. One young boy, 6-year-old Dustin Schneider, was killed in the storm. At least 34 other people were injured. This hour, we're going to get the latest on the storm. We'll be talking with Minnesota Public Radio reporters in St. Peter, LeCenter, and Comfrey. We'll also be checking in with Weather Service and emergency service officials. However, we'd also like to hear from those of you who actually experienced the storm yesterday. We invite you to give us a call. That number would be 227-6000 in the Twin City area, 227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. If you were one of the unfortunate people who actually had to deal directly with that storm yesterday, I'd be interested to hear your account of what happened. 227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. Officials with the State Division of Emergency Management have been briefing reporters at the state capitol on the storm. Joining us now from the Capitol is Minnesota Public Radio's Karen Louise Booth. Good afternoon, Karen.
Good afternoon, Gary. We got updates from the Division of Emergency Management. We also heard from the Governor's Office, the Department of Transportation, Department of Commerce, and the Department of Health. What we were told by John Kerr of the Division of Emergency Management is that their assessment tells them that 75% of Comfrey is destroyed by the storm. In St. Peter, 90% of 2,500 homes have either been destroyed or have sustained damage. And 95% of St. Peter's business district is destroyed. From the health department, we learned that, by and large, facilities, healthcare facilities, and nursing homes are operational, with one exception in St. Peter that we know of right now. The Grandview Good Samaritan Nursing Home has been evacuated, and residents there have been relocated. We learned that the governor is en route right now from Washington. While there, he was able to speak with James Witt of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, or FEMA. The governor is going to be seeking federal emergency aid. And we have a bill already emerging here at the state legislature by a senator who is proposing funding for state aid. So we got an overall assessment on the damage. The Red Cross obviously is also involved in housing people temporarily and feeding them. But what we're told by John Kerr of the Emergency Management Division of the state is that in long term, housing is going to be a big issue. When you talk about small towns and rural areas of the state, there is a shortage of long-term housing stock. And so many of these people, like we saw last year from the flood district, are going to be seeking rebuilding and long-term housing facilities.
95% of St. Peter's business district has been destroyed?
That's right. There are 125 businesses in St. Peter. 95% of them have either been destroyed or have sustained damage. In St. Peter, 90% of 2,500 homes have either sustained some damage or have been destroyed. So what we're told is that state officials cannot recall a similar situation to this, at least in the last 10 years. And also what we heard from those involving the insurance industry, Maggie Jensen of the Insurance Federation of Minnesota, says the whole region right now is crawling with insurance agents. But she said, unlike last year's flood situation, this one is different because in most cases, and generally speaking, most damage caused by a tornado is covered by homeowners insurance. But she recommends that people need to call their agents, find out how to file that claim. And she says before anybody throws anything away, take photos of their property so that they can show, in fact, that they did own it.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Karen.
You're welcome.
Karen Louise Booth checking in from the state capitol, where officials with the State Division of Emergency Management have been briefing reporters on some of the damage that was done by the storm that rolled through southern Minnesota yesterday. If you're not familiar with St. Peter, it is a picturesque town of about 8 to 10,000 people, located along the Minnesota River 12 miles northeast of Mankato, right on the edge of the Valley of the Jolly Green Giant. It was, as you heard, devastated by the storm, and joining us now from St. Peter is Art Hughes. Hi, Art.
Hi, Gary.
95% of the business district destroyed. Does that seem possible? Is that, from what you've seen there, is that true?
Well, it is hard to grasp, but if you're here and you're looking at it, it's not hard to believe. Business owners are out boarding up windows at this hour. Some of them are doing whatever they can to shore up their business. There's one hardware store owner who tacked up plywood onto his where his plate glass windows once were, and spray painted the words "open" the word "open" on all of them, because you wouldn't be able to tell otherwise. There is no electricity here still. It could be a matter of hours. It could be a matter of days before some of that is restored. There are brick facades laying out in the street. There are still cars overturned in parking lots. Large trucks that have that are sitting on their tops. So 95%, it does not surprise me. I don't think it would surprise anybody here working to restore some kind of normalcy.
Now, officials had a briefing for reporters this morning in St. Peter, right? Kind of bringing up to date on what happened and what happens now.
That's right. And it was a whole team of various people you would expect from the Red Cross, Salvation Army. Also, a lot of city officials kind of giving what their assessment is right now of the situation, whatever little bit information that they can get out. I guess the good news is that the city's water system is intact and in pretty good shape. That's according to the Public Works Director here. The bad news is that, as I mentioned, the electricity is off and will remain off in some parts of the city for a long time. Literally, they'll have to rebuild that electrical system from the overhanging wires block by block, and that's no easy feat. And as I've said before, you'll have to drive over electrical lines here, down electrical lines, pretty much wherever you go.
One of the good things, I suppose, if anything good can be said about this, is the fact that Gustavus Adolphus College, which was hit so hard by the tornado, they were on spring break, right? So not a lot of students hanging around.
Yeah, and if there's anything that can be good that comes out of this, it's the fact, and a lot of the public officials and people volunteering here will say this too, that a major tragedy was averted in that there wasn't a high number of lost lives and injured people. And officials here credit that to the early response system that they have in place. The sirens were able to get off, and people were listening to radio and watching television to know enough to get into their basements. I talked to several people who escaped serious injury just by doing that. And as you mentioned, spring break had just started for the students at Gustavus Adolphus, and from the looks of the dormitory where those students live out their day-to-day lives, it's hard to believe that they would have there would have been significant injuries from students there. I should also mention that there are volunteers moving into the county and asking how to help. Their people here are coordinating their own little efforts and working very hard to coordinate that. What they're asking for right now, and this comes from Jack Kohler, the county commissioner and who's the information officer for the this disaster effort, they're asking municipalities, county governments, city governments, to bring in chainsaws, dump trucks, and skilled workers to help clear these roads and help get the city back online in some sense of what it was this time yesterday. I should also mention part of the press conference, Senator Paul Wellstone is here in town. He's touring some of the areas. He's, of course, not able to say right now whether or not there will be federal assistance, but certainly that's on people's minds. And he spoke to reporters and to a crowd here at the courthouse earlier today.
I have already called FEMA this morning. I know the governor's staff is here. Everybody is working on this, and we will do everything we can to get as much assistance as possible to people in St. Peter, to people in the surrounding communities.
And those surrounding communities, too, were hard hit. We can't forget about that. I should mention there's sort of a picture emerging here of how this tornado, the path that this took. It came into Nicollet County around the city of Cortland, and it touched down by a tiny town by the name of North Star, and then it reached a width of up to three-quarters of a mile, I'm told, three-quarters of a mile, and just mowed its way into St. Peter. Fortunately, people in Nicollet are, the town of Nicollet, have to be counting their fortunes today because somehow the tornado lifted off the ground and literally skipped over the town of Nicollet before causing so much damage here in St. Peter. The rural areas, too, are hard hit. I did hear one number thrown out. These are very preliminary numbers, but in rural areas alone, there is one estimate from a county sheriff's office that damage there could be on upwards of $7 million. And officials here find it very hard to believe that they would not qualify for some kind of disaster, federal disaster relief.
Thank you, Art. Appreciate the report. Keep us updated, okay?
Thank you, Gary. I will.
Now, we have a caller on the line from St. Peter. Kristen, I understand you saw this funnel cloud move through your city?
Yes, I did. I need to let everyone know how great the weather service was. We had about four siren warnings before the tornado actually hit, so that I think that helped with the keep the safety factor there. A lot more people would have been hurt if we hadn't had that much warning.
Do you think people generally pay attention to those warnings?
Well, in March, I think we all were pretty skeptical. We didn't go down into the basement until about the third one, and I, in fact, went back upstairs to get a glass of water and looked out our front picture window and saw this enormous funnel cloud heading straight our way, and that's when I definitely became a lot more serious about the whole thing.
What did it sound like?
It sounds, everybody says, it's like a railroad, and that's exactly what it sounded like. We picked up about a piece of hail about the size of an orange after the whole thing happened. So with that type of hail banging against the house as well, it was an extremely frightening experience.
I was going to say, for those of us who've never been through this, as you're sitting in your basement and this tornado is roaring through your town, you heard the hail.
Mm-hmm.
What else did you hear? Anything?
The winds were just howling, and it sounded almost like just a screeching of brakes. It was such a high-pitched wail, and I really thought that our front windows were broken because you could hear this pounding just right above your head, and the whole foundation was just shaking. The earth was shaking. I heard you saying that over 90% of the homes were destroyed or damaged. We're one of the lucky 10% that just had a few holes in our siding due to stones being actually picked up and thrown at our house from the force of the wind. So it's amazing driving through downtown. It's absolutely devastating to see these Victorian homes that were built in the late 1800s that are just roofless and destroyed. It's heartbreaking.
Do you think St. Peter's, well, obviously St. Peter's going to be rebuilt, no question about that, but this has got to be just a terrible thing.
It is. St. Peter is a fantastic community in that everyone is really pulling together and helping each other out, and they will rebuild. Everyone will rebuild, and I think it's making us a stronger community.
Well, I'm glad to hear that at least that your house was not severely damaged and that you're okay.
Thank you very much.
Don't hang up. If you could stay on the line, please.
Sure.
Thanks for calling in. It's a woman named Kristen who called us from St. Peter, one of the folks who was caught right in the middle of the big storm that rolled through southern Minnesota yesterday. If you, too, experienced that, we would love to hear from you and get a sense of just what that was like. 227-6000 is our Twin City area number, 227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828, 227-6000 or 1-800-242-2828. After the storm rolled through St. Peter, Art was telling us how it went through Cortland and North Star, skipped over Nicollet, blasted through St. Peter. It moved east, and the next big target really was the town of Le Centre in Le Sueur County. Brent Wolf joins us from Le Centre. Good afternoon, Brent.
Hi, Gary.
I understand the mobile home park in Le Centre was the area that suffered the most damage in Le Centre.
Yeah, that's right. The mobile home park was the residential area that suffered the most damage. There are probably about 12 mobile homes there that are completely destroyed, and it really just looks like a gigantic pile of rubble. You can't even distinguish one trailer from the next. And amazingly enough, there was very little injury there. They had a brick shelter where everybody ran to and took cover, and there were only two minor injuries in the entire city. And a lot of those people are now picking through the rubble, trying to salvage what they can, and the cleanup is really underway here, which is not as serious a situation as both Art and Kristen were describing in St. Peter, but it's still dramatic to see.
Mm-hmm. People still, I suppose, a little shocked there, even though they didn't sustain that kind of horrible damage.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who are just sort of standing in the mobile home park, sort of looking at the damage and not really sure what to do. There are some National Guardsmen who were there, and they were waiting for some bulldozers and heavy moving equipment to begin to clean it up. But there are a lot of people who are talking with one another and just trying to sort of figure out what happened and where to go from here.
Okay, Brent. Thanks. Keep us posted, won't you?
Sure.
Brent Wolf checking in from Le Centre, where a mobile home park was hit by yesterday's storm. As Brent noted, though, although there was substantial damage to some of the mobile homes, fortunately nobody was really injured. Now, while the Centre and St. Peter residents had some warning that a tornado was bearing down on them, the folks in Comfrey apparently weren't quite so lucky. Comfrey is west of St. Peter, so it got hit earlier than St. Peter did. In fact, one of the first towns really devastated by the storm, and Mark Stile joins us now. Mark, you've been in Comfrey, but you're outside the city limits now, is that right?
Right. I'm about a mile north of Comfrey, and can see the long line of cars basically waiting to get into town, people who want to see what's left of their house.
How bad is the damage in Comfrey?
The tornado really damaged, let's say, the southeast two-thirds of town quite heavily, with a lot of the roofs blown off houses and businesses. In fact, the business section seemed to have taken the worst damage, with some brick buildings completely collapsed. The fire hall is completely down, with a couple of fire trucks, I'm told, still inside. And the elevator complex, an agricultural-type business, the bins were completely blown over, and any buildings there also were taken away.
Is it true that the folks there didn't get a whole lot of warning on this?
I talked to the fire chief in town. He was out on weather duty, and he said that he gave the alarm to the folks in town at the fire hall to trigger the sirens. And he estimates that a minute after he gave that alert, the tornado tore into town. So there was not much warning, and he assumes that some people were watching the weather, along with hearing on the radio and television that there was a threat for severe weather, so that although they may not have got a straightforward warning from the weather service, that they were aware of the situation and could act quickly to take cover.
Now, you, what was it, 8 years ago, the town in of Chandler out in southwestern Minnesota got leveled by a tornado?
That's right.
And you were around to cover that story. How does the damage in Comfrey compare with what happened in Chandler?
I would have to say that there are slightly different situations. In Chandler, the tornado, when all was said and done about that twister, the tornado was rated, I believe, an F5, which is at the top of the scale. And in Chandler, houses were completely gone. There was nothing left but foundations for many of the structures, not even a scrap of wood sticking out of the foundations. In Comfrey, it's more roofs torn off. Practically every window in town seems to have been broken. Some houses are down completely, but there is not the clear swath of destruction that was seen in Chandler. Now, I don't think, though, that means that the Comfrey situation is any less critical, because a house can look structurally complete from the outside, but it may have been twisted, shoved off the foundation, a roof torn off, all the windows broken, that it just is not paid to repair anymore. So there is a difference, but I guess when it's your house and it's destroyed or severely damaged, it probably doesn't make a lot of difference whether it's completely gone or the roof gone or windows out, that sort of thing.
Was there a lot of damage out in rural parts, out in the countryside as well?
Right. It appears that after Comfrey, the tornado pretty much stayed on the ground, taking a slight northeast bearing and catching at least a half dozen farmsteads right in the Comfrey area. And again, a lot of trees down on those farms. In some cases, barns completely collapsed, roofs torn off other buildings, and it apparently continued to the east then and caused more damage around the Lake Hanska area and quite a path of destruction through farm country as well.
Any guesstimate yet, Mark, as to when the town will be opened up for people to go back and forth without all the restrictions currently in place?
The best guess is that'll probably be tomorrow. As I said, right now they have checkpoints on all the roads going into town with National Guard troops at those checkpoints. And I can see a line of about 24 cars slowly getting past that checkpoint. The residents have to produce some sort of identification to let the authorities know that they own a home in town or a business, and then they're allowed in. But I'm told that, it's not an all-day visit, maybe a half hour, an hour to collect personal possessions, that sort of thing. And then they're asked again to, to leave town. And what the enforcement officials are saying is that a lot of that reason they're taking such strict precautions is for the protection of the residents. They don't want people, hurting themselves or getting in the way of some of the cleanup equipment until the roads are really cleared so that they can get in and really begin the cleanup. But it doesn't look like it'll be a situation where everybody is back in town today and cleaning up hard at it. That probably will wait till tomorrow.
Thank you, Mark. Appreciate you joining us.
Sure.
Keep us posted. Mark Stile checking in from Comfrey, Minnesota, one of the towns that was hit hard by the tornado that rolled through yesterday. One of the odd things about the storm yesterday, we keep getting reports of material from these communities turning up literally, the better part of 100 miles away. And Sherry joins us now from Minnetonka. I understand you actually ended up with some material from Comfrey, is that right?
That's right.
What did you find?
We got home yesterday after being gone all day, and we found a check on our sidewalk in front of our house, and I picked it up and looked at it and told my husband, this is a check from the People's State Bank of Comfrey. And we didn't know where Comfrey was, and we brought it in the house and set it down. And this morning my husband said, Comfrey was hit by the tornado last night. And we thought that was really interesting that a check flew all the way from Comfrey and landed on our sidewalk.
Yes. there was a report earlier I heard a fellow in Egan, another Twin Cities suburb, found some materials apparently from the Center Public Library or whatever. It's amazing.
It is. We're on the southeast corner of Minnetonka, and I haven't heard of anything coming that far.
Yeah. Now, you folks are not immune to tornadoes. You certainly had your share out there in the western suburbs. Does this give you some pause for concern?
We were in Apple Valley last night, and we all ran down into the basement when we heard the sirens going off, and that's quite a bit closer to where the storms hit.
Right. Thank you, Sherry. Appreciate the call.
You bet.
Caller checking in from Minnetonka. She found a statement from the Comfrey Bank in her front yard yesterday. Another caller checked in from Victoria, found some bank statements from Mountain Lake, which is right over by Comfrey as well, way west of New Ulm yet. So you can imagine how far that material actually flew. We're talking this hour, the second hour of our midday program, about the big storm that rolled through southern Minnesota. And, of course, if you tuned in late, the damage estimates are still being compiled. But some sense of the scope of devastation. Sounds like St. Peter was hit by far the worst. 95%, according to state officials right now, 95% of the businesses in St. Peter were damaged by the tornado that rolled through St. Peter yesterday. At last report, 1 6-year-old boy was killed in the storm, and 34 people, at least 34 people, were injured. If you were one of the folks who were directly affected by the tornado yesterday, we'd love to hear your story. Give us a call, 227-6000, 227-6000, outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. Joining us now from the state capitol is Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe. Good afternoon, Senator.
Good afternoon, Gary.
I would imagine the state will be forthcoming with some special assistance for these folks.
Yes, we will. I think the most important thing is to let people know that the state will help. We have the resources, and that certainly is something that we should do. Obviously, there's going to be a need to get the inventory of what has taken place, the severity of the damage, and then try to respond as quickly as possible.
Do you have any idea, Senator, how long it might take for some of that state assistance to actually start arriving?
Well, I don't think that's going to take very long. I think the normal process, at least during these natural disasters, is that the governor will request a disaster declaration, and then it'll be up to the federal government to either declare that or not. If it is declared, then that will trigger some resources, but that will take a little while. As a matter of fact, we had a bill up this morning in the Finance Committee that was moving along, and we amended onto it provisions to do what we can as it relates to this disaster. We're going to be looking at, in the Tax Committee, accelerating the local government aid and HACCP payments to these local units of government. St. Peter has a request in the capital budget bill for $12 million, I think, for a wastewater treatment. Obviously, we're going to probably look very kindly upon that. And then I think we're going to try to get money into the Department of Trade and Economic Development for the Community Development Block Grants and the Public Facilities Authority to help with some of the needs that local government will have.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a special pot of money set aside for emergencies, Senator, or when these things come up, do you just appropriate extra money? How's that work?
I talked with the Commissioner of Finance, Wayne Seminole, earlier this morning, and he says that there may be some resources left over from the previous flood disaster accounts that we had. So we're looking at that. But in terms of having resources, believe me, with the projected revenue surplus we have the resources to help with this, just as we've tried to respond to the needs of the flood last spring. So we will do that, and it's important that we do that because when people need help, we should rally together. I think one other thing that they will learn in that whole area is how very generous and kind the rest of Minnesota will be in terms of trying to help respond to the personal loss that people have had.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate your joining us.
Thank you.
Senate Majority Leader Roger Moe joining us from the state capitol, actually from the floor of the state Senate. Craig Edwards is the head of the National Weather Service office in the Twin Cities, and he joins us now to talk about yesterday's storm. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
First of all, congratulations. I understand you folks started sending out some early advisories already on Saturday about the potential for a really nasty storm.
Yeah, hopefully we have the same opportunity for the rest of the spring to lay out a scenario that works as well with severe weather. The forecasters on Saturday analyzing the numerical output indicated that there was potential for severe thunderstorms and put that in the forecast on Saturday afternoon for Sunday afternoon, and then we put a severe weather outlook out at 5 a.m. Sunday morning that indicated that there was potential for tornadoes in southern Minnesota, and then that was reconfirmed again in a statement at 12:30. So what we like to do ideally is to give as much lead time as possible so people through the course of the day can plan activities and determine where they need to be or where they shouldn't be in the event severe weather develops.
Pretty unusual to have a storm like this in March, is it not? I mean, it seems to me that the earliest is April for these kind of things.
Well, it's unusual, but the whole winter of 97-98 in spring has been unusual with the warm weather we experienced in February, second, third warmest winter on record. We knew that spring could have an early arrival. So it bit us early this year, and fortunately we were on a lookout for conditions that could produce severe weather. Typically, you might say, well, we're let our guard down a little bit, and it can't possibly happen. But forecasters' pattern recognition says this is the type of situation where you have the potency for tornadoes to occur, and we were able to predict that ahead of time.
What's our biggest tornado month as a rule?
The biggest tornado month is late May and June, so we've got a long way to go, and typically we do not have severe weather awareness week until mid or late April, and sort of heighten the awareness that we're into severe weather season, and this event here has certainly triggered that early this year.
Mr. Edwards, have you determined yet, was this just one giant tornado, or were there a bunch of tornadoes?
Well, there was a complex thunderstorm that developed down in southwest Minnesota, and where the report we're getting out of our office at Sioux Falls, who handles the counties in southwest Minnesota, indicated that they had 9 confirmed tornadoes in counties in Cottonwood, Murray, Nobles in that area. As the storm roared out of Nobles County into through Cottonwood County and Brown and Nicolet County, there was it's a monster thunderstorm on radar, and to try to determine how many tornadoes were in it just on radar is difficult. But we have a survey team out this afternoon. Todd Krause and Dan Miller have been stopping doing ground surveys. Todd just reported in, said that the wind speeds in the St. Peter tornado appear to be on the order of 170 miles an hour. The storm in Le Centre looked a little bit weaker than that with winds of about 125 miles an hour. So he thinks it might be 2 separate tornadoes, and so it's difficult to tell how many tornadoes there actually were that on the ground at one point or whether one storm produced a single tornado.
There was some speculation that the tornado that passed through St. Peter was like 3/4 of a mile wide. Is that possible?
That could be believable. There have been documentation of tornadoes being that wide. March typically can produce the more powerful tornadoes just due to the dynamics in the atmosphere. So by the time we get into late May and June, we look at for the weaker variety, the slower-moving variety tornadoes, but March produces the most devastating, powerful tornadoes. We've seen that in portions of the South with Georgia and Florida getting clobbered, and then portions of Illinois last week, and then Minnesota seemed like it jumped a couple states by the time we got to here.
Well, thank you, sir, and appreciate the early warning.
Well, we did well this time, and it's just a caution that people need to be tuned in and be monitoring communications, because we still feel that there were probably gaps in the warning program that some people watching cable television or not tuned into a local station might have missed all this event.
Right. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for your help.
Bye-bye. Craig Edwards, who is the head of the National Weather Service office in the Twin City metropolitan area. We're talking this hour about the tornadoes that rolled through southern Minnesota yesterday. One person was killed, a six-year-old boy. 34, at least 34 other people were injured in the storm. Major, major damage was reported in the St. Peter and Comfrey areas. St. Peter apparently got hit the hardest. We'd be interested in hearing your report on what happened if you were one of the unfortunate people who lived through yesterday's storm in southern Minnesota. Give us a call. 227-6000 is our Twin City area number, 227-6000. Outside the Twin Cities, 1-800-242-2828. Barbara Fonkert joins us now. She is a natural disaster planner with the Division of Emergency Management, Department of Public Safety. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Fairly unusual March storm for Minnesota. Are most people aware of what they're supposed to do when a tornado does strike?
That's debatable. It depends sort of on where they are. Many people know that, you know, when you're at home, you should go into your basement, and up here we have a lot of basements.
Still go to the southwest corner, by the way, or is that?
That's one of those things that if you can get into your basement, it's better to get under a piece of heavy furniture, under stairway, something like that, not worry so much about which corner you're in.
Okay. So if you're in your house, that's the thing to do, but there's a problem, you were starting to say, with people who aren't in their homes.
Yeah, if you're not in your homes, if you're at work, if you're out and about in your vehicle, if you're in the shopping mall, those are kinds of places where people may be at the time of a tornado, which could very well have happened yesterday. The tornado is hitting, you know, at the time they did. And there are certain other precautions people need to take for those times, and they may not be aware of those at, you know, where they're at.
Right. What should they do?
If they're an automobile and there's a tornado warning out, they should get out of the automobile. That is not a safe place to be. We're finding out automobiles just get tossed around all over the place. They should get out of the automobile, lie in a ditch if possible, cover their head, you know, protect themselves that way. If they're in a shopping mall, places like that, you want to stay out of the way of windows. Interior places are the best to go to, putting as many walls between you and the outside as possible. And then at work, workplaces should have an evacuation plan to whatever is their place for sheltering. And that might be something people want to check out.
Mm-hmm. Are there any uniform regulations or procedures that are used in terms of when the sirens are sounded? Or does that vary from locality to locality?
The procedures that we all advocate is when the siren sounds for a tornado warning, that you take cover immediately. You do whatever you have to protect yourself immediately. How that happens in various places, we would hope that, especially in buildings or businesses, that there would be some kind of way to notify people to take cover immediately, to get their evacuation going immediately, not to wait.
Have you heard any speculation as to why it is that mobile home parks seem to be so vulnerable to these storms?
Well, you know, they are not made for lots of wind, and that's the major thing that comes with any severe thunderstorm, tornado, et cetera, is wind. So that in itself makes them vulnerable. Even if they're tied down, they're still very vulnerable because of wind.
Hmm. Well, thanks so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Barbara Fonkert, who is with the Division of Emergency Management. She's a natural disaster planner with the division. That's a division of the Department of Public Safety. We have received word that all highways into St. Peter remain barricaded for today, tonight, and on into tomorrow. Minnesota Department of Transportation officials note that U.S. Highway 169, State Highways 22 and 99, and all secondary roads are officially closed to traffic until further notice because of the severe storm damage in and around the St. Paul or St. Peter area. The State Patrol is working with the National Guard this evening to restrict access to St. Peter. MnDOT crews have set up alternative routes if you're traveling in that area. All travelers, though, should plan ahead to use alternative routes and avoid storm-damaged areas, including the town of Comfrey, which is a ways west of St. Peter, but of course was also hit hard by the storm. Lynette Nyman joins us now from St. Peter, and I understand, Lynette, that Gustavus Adolphus officials have been talking with reporters about the damage that the college sustained.
Right. Things are still early for them to make a true assessment, but they do realize that they're going to be closed for at least a week, if not two. They seem to think that they will be able to get themselves together, gather alumni if possible, anybody they can to bring the campus together and repair the damage that's been done. Most of the windows have been blown out. Of course, everybody's been talking about the spire on the Capitol that's been that was torn down. The president of the college says, you know, the spire, yes, it may be symbolic for the destruction, but it will be rebuilt, and he seems to think that that is the spirit of the campus, and he's positive it will happen soon.
Lynette, we had a caller here to our studios who wanted to know just how alumni can help. Did the college officials have much information on that?
No, still too early. They hope to be getting that kind of information out soon, and of course, it's really hard. If people want to actually come and help, they can't because, as we know, the roads are blocked, and so it will be some time. I think right now probably it's better for people to just sit tight for a bit. There are crews out there that are working to remove trees, debris, and soon probably others will be able to come in and do some hands-on work as well.
I think the most amazing bit of information that we have come across yet this hour, we received right at the beginning of the hour, 95% of the businesses in St. Peter were destroyed in this storm, according to state officials. Can you give us some, what's that like? I mean, what's it look like there in the town?
Well, it's, last night I think it was, we couldn't really tell, and, you know, we knew that major damage had been done, you know, windows out, roofs ripped off, and now, you know, roofs that were damaged last night are now sinking into buildings, and the bricks are just kind of strewn all about, falling apart. 10 roofs, of course, are completely demolished and wrapped around different other kinds of structures left standing. The downtown Main Street area is still standing, so to speak. It hasn't been leveled, but these are old buildings, and they don't really withstand the kind of winds that this tornado brought through. Some of the other buildings, just a few streets in from there, that's still part of the downtown area, it's absolutely kind of unbelievable that, and I talked to some crews who just said, looked at it and said, definitely there's really no way to repair these structures, especially the Catholic Church, that like a giant boulder that has just been thrown through the nave from side to side and left a gaping hole and everything just wrecked in its path.
You spent the storm in the basement, did you not?
Yes, I did, actually. Yes,
what,
I did.
What I asked a caller from St. Peter earlier this hour who went through the same thing, what it sounded like as you were sitting in the basement. What did it sound like to you?
There was a deep roar, and I wasn't really sure what it was. People had been talking about softball-size hail, and I thought, boy, if that's softball-sized hail, I don't really know what hail is. But the wind was tremendous and things knocking against the walls, and I think the most memorable moment was just wondering, how am I going to get rid of this pressure in my ears? Wondering, wait a minute, I'm not flying 30,000 feet above sea level, so what's this pressure in my head? And then when it was gone, the tornado was gone.
Were you scared?
Yes, I was very scared. Most definitely. I was quite terrified and not really knowing what to do and knowing to stay in the basement, but is it over? People were talking on the radio. We heard reports that there were other tornadoes that had touched down that were coming, and we didn't really know if it was safe to be outside, and yet we wanted to know what had happened, and eventually just ventured outside and kept on going.
Well, glad it turned out well for you, Lynette.
Great.
Keep us posted. Thank you very much.
We will. Thank you.
Lynette Nyman, one of our Minnesota Public Radio reporters on the scene of the big storm that rolled through southern Minnesota yesterday, checking in from St. Peter and specifically reporting on the little press conference that officials at Gustavus Adolphus College held this morning, or this afternoon, rather. Gustavus, one of the areas in St. Peter that was hit particularly hard. Maggie Jensen joins us now. She's Communications Director for the Insurance Federation of Minnesota. Good afternoon.
Hi, Gary.
Thanks for joining us. A lot of people obviously have been affected by this storm. Does their regular homeowners insurance cover the damage?
Generally speaking, most homeowners insurance policies should cover damage inflicted by a tornado. However, policies vary from policyholder to policyholder, and it's really important that you understand exactly what the coverage is that you bought, and therefore to find your policy if you can, or check with your agent and find out exactly what coverages you have.
Mm-hmm. As a rule, obviously I would assume personal property is covered, or is that up in the air?
Generally, personal property would be covered, but again, see, when people make that decision to buy a policy, they may, at the time, make decisions to exclude certain coverages because they don't think they'll really need them, or they don't think that if that particular item were to be damaged, it would really cause them that much hardship to replace it, or whatever the thought process might be. And sometimes we make decisions based on how much a policy coverage costs or how much we do not want to spend or do want to spend. And then when the time comes around, we find out that perhaps we have more coverage than our neighbor did because we went ahead and bought as much coverage as we could get, or we have less coverage because we didn't feel we needed it. So you could go down a block of homes in any one of these towns and probably find from home to home their coverages are different.
How does the insurance coverage dovetail with any federal or state disaster assistance that might be available?
Well, the thought at this point is that because this is not a flood, and homeowners insurance does not cover flooding, that a lot of this damage should be probably covered by commercial insurance. And because of that, then, I think that would be factored into how much damage is unrecoverable and how much assistance people need beyond what their insurance policies provide them.
Mm-hmm.
And agents typically advise people to buy coverage that is a replacement policy. In other words, if it would cost $150,000 to replace your $125,000 house, then your insurance will pay, you know, the $150,000. Well, actually, 80% of the replacement cost is the standard term.
How fast can people who are covered, how fast can they expect to get some assistance from through their insurance policy?
Well, we were in touch with one of our member companies this morning who is a big insurer in Minnesota, and they have a computerized system that will enable adjusters to write checks on the spot. Now, that's not going to be the case with every company, but insurance companies are really just pouring personnel into that area. The bigger companies and even the not-so-big companies are set up for this kind of thing. They have catastrophe plans. They have catastrophe teams. I'm understanding that catastrophe adjusters are being called in from all over the country to come to Minnesota and look at the damage in our state. So that site right now is crawling with insurance people.
Mm-hmm. A lot different than the floods up in the Red River Valley last year when nobody had flood insurance.
Yeah, that was a real shame. The commercial insurers tried to do as much as they could to expedite claim payments on other kinds of coverages that could kick in a flood situation, but lots of times it was, you know, a few thousand yeah. here and a few thousand there and not really what the people needed to replace what they lost.
Thank you, Maggie. Good talking with you.
Thank you.
Maggie Jensen, who is Communications Director for the Insurance Federation of Minnesota. Of course, the town of Chandler in southwestern Minnesota was devastated by a tornado back in 1992. About two-thirds of the town suffered damage and some 48 homes were completely destroyed. Al Viss is Chandler's city manager, and this morning he told Minnesota Public Radio's Perry Finelli that in the aftermath of a tornado, it's almost, or it's most important, rather, to focus on the needs of residents.
The first thing you want to do is get the people halfway back to normal. I know we had state people come in and asked, you know, why we didn't build the city hall right away. And our first, the city council, we met in temporary quarters in the firemen's meeting room. And our first obligation was to get the people halfway back to normal. Many, many homes were totally destroyed. Quite a few had heavy damage. A great number of them had moderate damage. I think there's only 9 homes in the community that didn't need repair. And our first goal was to get the people, you know, back into their homes or into a home or, you know, try to get them back to normal. And after that, our second goal was to get the businesses, you know, up and going again.
Now, this is 8 years later. Has the city pretty much rebuilt itself?
Our community is 106 years old, but we actually have a new old community, if you follow that. Everything has all been rebuilt.
How much have you spent?
I think we're around the $14 million on the entire program. That's the for the city infrastructure, it's for the city parks, anything to do with the city expenses, the businesses, and the homes. We're in that $14 million range.
Yesterday's tornadoes caused damage across a broad part of the state. I wonder if you think that it'll be more difficult, that will make it more difficult for a single community to rebuild.
No, I don't think so. You know, there's when it comes to communities, whether you're a small community, a medium-sized community, or a large community, it's going to depend upon the resiliency of the people themselves. And our experience is that when you have major situations like we did, you know, it was a natural disaster, the outpouring of help and support is phenomenal.
One final question. What piece of advice would you have for cities like St. Peter and Lonsdale, which have been hit so hard?
What I would suggest to people like that is, first of all, you know, as individuals and as families and as a community, pull together, absolutely pull together and work together. There's going to be lots of healing done as far as individuals are concerned. And people are, you know, they just, the first thing that happens, they're in total shock. And then they kind of go through another time, you know, where that's kind of people get angry or they get they go on the defense, or and then it just kind of a thing that the human person has to go through. And I think the basic support that these people need is not only physical but also moral support. This is an area where the community churches and the community church leaders really play a big part.
Al Viss, who is the city manager of Chandler, Minnesota, talking this morning with Minnesota Public Radio's Perry Finelli. Chandler, which is out in southwestern Minnesota, was hit by a tornado in 1992, virtually leveled. And if memory serves, the first reports of this big storm that started rolling through southern Minnesota, first reports came from the Chandler area. Most of the damage was done in the Comfrey and St. Peter areas. Governor Arne Carlson will be touring the storm area this afternoon, and you can expect continuing coverage here on Minnesota Public Radio of the storm and its aftermath. That does it for Midday today. Gary Acton here. Thanks so much for tuning in. Programming on NPR is supported by Shandwick. Your company's reputation is an asset. Managing it is the role of Shandwick Public Relations.